Fearscape Media Network, exploring the unknown, one podcast at a time.
Fearscape Media Network is your new home for everything weird and enlightening. Check out podcasts and YouTube shows covering content from discussions on horror films to the paranormal to meditation. Find out more at fearscapemedia.com.
Welcome to everyone to Unsensitive, a show where we take a subject and talk with an expert and break it down with questions that might be normally too impolite to ask. I am your host, Ray Robinson. And when the topic of sex work comes up, lots of people get uncomfortable, possibly because their religion of choice takes a damning approach to it. Maybe because they can't imagine themselves taking on any of those roles. Maybe they think it's degrading or unhealthy for the mind or the body, or maybe they just think, well, if it's illegal, it must be bad. Well, today we're going to explore this from somebody that can give some more personal experiences in this area. So everybody, welcome Michaela to the show. Welcome to the show, Michaela.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I hate to do the cliche, so tell us about yourself thing, but let's go ahead and at least qualify the type of sex work that that you are most familiar with.
Hi. Okay, so I'm known online as Lady Michaela. I have dabbled in a little bit of everything. I'm known mostly for burlesque, nerdlesque, and stripping in the strip club. I also have sold online content. I've dabbled in the fetish industry a little bit. One of my closest friends is like my favorite dominatrix in the community here in Florida. So I've kind of seen it all, done it all kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, and then I've also written a book about the censorship of women's bodies and taking away the agency, including on the internet, which is where most of us function now.
Well, you already kind of touched a little bit on one of the first things I wanted to ask you about, and that's when people, there's so many different types of what is considered a sex work or a sex job. And like you said, you dabbled in several of those things. But a lot of people, when they think sex work, the only thing they think is prostitution. And as you said, you've done several different things that kind of are adjacent to that, not fully on that. But selling your body in the manner of a visual representation, whether it's online, whether it's a strip club, is that really in its own self a form of prostitution as well?
Well, first off, let's talk about a phrase that you just used called selling your body.
Ah, yes.
A lot of people automatically think when they think sex work, they think selling your body. And I'd like to mention that so is working in an Amazon warehouse. So is working in a Walmart retail. So is, you know, stacking shelves in Target. so all of that is selling, you know, working in a coal mine where eventually your lungs, you know, get filled with terrible chemicals. So all of those equals selling your body. So I think that it's great that you use that phrase, because then we can just level the playing field of equivalency when it comes to respect of someone's career choice or job or way that they make income in this capitalistic world we live in. I'm still crossing my fingers that one day the Star Trek Federation will, you know, save us where we all don't have to work in capitalism, but I'm hoping. So you are correct that sex work covers a lot of different types of sex work. There are people who sell services, which are anything from intercourse to physical touch to services such as dominating. There's fetish work from everything from wax play to restraints. There's also verbal sex work. For some people sell just verbal services. Everything from humiliation to casual doming. Then there's also the visual sex work. If anyone that sells pictures of their body, even if it's your favorite cosplayer in just their swimsuit cosplay at Dragon Con, you know, if they're selling a photo of them in that costume, and it's considered a sexual photo because it's a woman showing her body in for profit, Yeah. Or of any gender, actually. But mostly we focus on women because women are the ones that are not allowed to have agency in our society. It's frowned upon for us to profit off of something that culture has told us we must control for the patriarchy. But there's everything from, like, what I've done. I have everything from, I sold content online. There's videos of me back in the day at, like, conventions for fetish work. So, you know, there's a little bit of everything out there for everyone. If someone can get some form of pleasure, whether it's emotional or physical pleasure from something out there, it's what's the rule? Rule 43 of the internet or something? It's probably going to be something someone can profit off of. Yes. And honestly, it helps marginalized people make income where they wouldn't normally. A lot of women, trans people, non-binary people, a lot of queer men and queer women, even POC and BIPOC and Indigenous people have partake in sex work of different kinds, especially when you're a marginalized person. It's a way to partake in making income to something that they have within their skill set. So sex work covers a lot. It can be anything from your favorite porn star to, you know, the local service provider on your local seeking arrangement site, you know?
Now, there are folks out there that when they think of sex work, they think of it as a degrading profession that hurts the image and the image of women in general, or hurts what how a woman is perceived in society. You know, some women like to think that that is something maybe below them. Would that be an accurate statement of any kind? You seem very comfortable, so you don't seem like you're degraded in any capacity. But is there some folks that feel like that's a degrading profession that have actually maybe said something like that to you?
I definitely feel that there is this myth or this concept that sex work is degrading and bad towards women, or bad towards society. And I feel like it all comes down to, if a person feels that it is degrading to women or degrading to humans, or that it's bad, it most likely comes down to two things. One is consent and their understanding. The other one is giving women and marginalized people bodily agency. There is a demand, so we provide that supply. And it's always the worry that, well, it's bad for feminism, it's bad for women, for sex work to be a thing. So tell me why. Why is it bad? Is it bad because women have told us, or women have been told by men, that we are not supposed to have pleasure or enjoy pleasure, or that it's something done to us and not something we are allowed to enjoy or profit off of? It comes down to whether or not there's consent involved, whether or not if they understand consent. I get a lot of people who will say certain phrases, and ask me things, especially when I perform in the strip club or when I'm doing a gig for, like, just casual burlesque or anything like that. You'll get people who will ask, well, isn't this degrading? Don't you want to get away from this? I always think that the saying, it's a meme on the internet I've seen lately, where you want to shame a woman who's getting paid for sending photos of herself to someone online, when some of you girls are given everything away for free and hoping for a text back in the morning and not getting it. So, so honestly, if the demand is there, why can't women profit off of it? Why can't women supply these services? And honestly, it's empowering to know that I can set a price mm-hmm. on my services. A lot of people have, one person in particular said to me, they're like, you have no sense of value, self-value or self-worth. And I told them, I have such a sense of value and self-worth that I can put a profit margin on every minute of my time. Because while I'm selling a fantasy, or I'm selling a dance, or I'm selling a conversation on the phone, like when I did phone sex, I'm really just selling my time and energy. And I value myself so much that I can put a price on it and then a profit margin on top of it. So I think it comes down to a lot of people understanding that women who do sex work and marginalized people who do sex work actually have 3 times the sense of self-value, self-worth than the people who are shaming them for it. I find that a lot of people think that there's a huge problem with it because they're only seeing it from the side of the stigma. Mm-hmm. They're only seeing the side of it from the perpetualized shame stigma that's been forced upon it through particularly Christian-based cultures and society. Antique propriety options that honestly were not even considered in some cultures through history. In some cultures in history, sex workers were praised and considered high society. That's one of my favorite things about the little tidbits of Greco-Roman culture pre-Christianity of just, yes, sex workers ran towns. It's fantastic. I love that part of history. The Wild Wild West was run by sex workers. I mean, you know, if you look through history, the most powerful women have been ones who have had their own control and called their own shots and set their own boundaries. And that's a person that has self-worth and does not feel degraded at all by what they do. What's degrading is the stigma and the culture around it and the idea that a woman calling the shots is horrible and must be somehow broken.
Gotcha. Now, a lot of time and devotion has been, time in the media has been devoted towards rampant drug use and physical abuse, human trafficking, a lot of the really negative aspects of what is kind of sex work. I mean, one could see that you could see all those in many other professions too, but is it as prevalent as the media portrays it in some of the areas that you have partaken in?
Honestly, I've seen just as much drug use and dangers of entitled people who feel entitled to women's bodies and the risk nature being out there in nightclubs and restaurants just mm-hmm. as much as I've seen in the strip club and in other forms of sex work locations. There is the extra layer, so it's equal, but there's always that extra layer of knowing that the cops don't come for us.
Right.
When I worked for a particular strip club in Central Florida, we had to worry about the fact that if something happened to us, we either had to hope that we paid the right bouncer to come help us out, or that we made sure that the club understood they had to call the cops on the patron, not on the performers, because we also ran the risk of ICE coming to our club because we had a lot of Latina performers. Mm-hmm. So there's always a layer too that there's the danger of people arresting the sex worker, not the person harassing or hurting them. Arresting performers for what they're wearing on stage and not the drunk asshole doing cocaine in the front row that we originally called the cops to come deal with. Yeah. It's never about the person that's causing the problem that's making a space unsafe. It's always been about, well, this woman is part of the problem because of what she does or who she is. So there's always an extra layer of danger, especially for women of color or trans humans. There's always been the extra layer of privilege that I've experienced as a white cis woman, that even though I am a queer sex worker, there's less danger for me and there's thrice the danger for everyone else. So yeah, definitely, especially because the law is not there to help you. The law is there to rack up more money around you and to use you for that. And in the press and in the news, you see them cling to this. You see them cling to the more crime, the more clicks to open their article, the more hysteria, the more scandalousness, the more views to their video. I feel that a lot of times people will do reviews and articles and the press will cover things of for the scandal of it, but then they completely forget when sex workers are victims. In Florida in this past year, at Gold Diggers, we had a sex worker who was actually shot outside of a club by a entitled patron who did not respect them. And the police never really cared about the case at all. And the press barely covered it. Mm-hmm. It took a social network of sex workers to get the word out and to make it visible to the general public via social media for people to learn about this amazing woman's life and what she'd done for the community and everything like that and who she was as a stripper for gold diggers. So it's never about caring about us. They never care about sex workers. They care about the scandal and the views and the clicks that we get them because of the stigma attached. So, and human trafficking can happen anywhere. It can happen in a nightclub. It can happen at church. It can happen in your schools even. But because there must be something wrong, quote unquote, with the woman doing sex work, clearly they're victims at all times. There was a really interesting situation with Jacksonville. In Jacksonville, Florida, they did a law and legislation recently passed to require sex workers to change permitting and to change, because sometimes to be a stripper, you have to have a permit. Depending on where you are, there's different legislation and laws when it comes to being strippers and what you can wear and things like that. They changed their laws in order to stop sex trafficking. That was their goal, was to save the children, to save the sex trafficking victims. But on their whole entire committee, they had only a third of them, actually a fourth of them were women, and not a single one of them was a stripper. So it's more about what looks good and not what is actually helping sex workers and what's actually helping strippers at all. And it was quite interesting because the law that they even passed affects their local circus performers and their local burlesque dancers and their local go-go dancers at their favorite nightclub. So it's really interesting that they don't think to ask sex workers first.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that.
Excellent. Now, another topic that myth, maybe, I don't know, you're probably going to be able to clear this up or not. Another kind of commonly known myth is the woman that says, I'm only doing this to put myself through college. And you're already laughing because I'm curious just how often do you hear that yourself in the profession, and how accurate is it actually as a real thing?
If you think about the age range especially when it comes to stripping, I find that it's normally like a third of the girls are actually college age and actually working in college, or they have another job or something like that. But most of the girls I danced with all already had their degrees. They were moms. They had other jobs that they were hoping to work to get. And then there were some that were just like full-time stripper all the time, not going to quit. And then there's some, like my favorite comedian is actually Jack the Stripper, who is a stripper that and sex worker of other kinds as well, that actually went on to comedy to fill her time when she was good enough to retire. So I think it just depends on the person. I do know, however, that is the fantasy that people want to buy. And we're in the business of selling fantasies. So, and I know that sometimes you have that first 5 minutes of watching a patron come in the door, figuring out what fantasy they wanted to buy or what they would find interesting. And in the first couple minutes of talking with them, they normally tell you what they want at a strip club without even saying it. So there's been times where even though I'm in my 30s, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm totally working through college. Oh, daddy, pay my rent, you know? Like, it just depends on what the fantasies you want to buy. No, it's never her real name. No, she's not always working through college. No, she's never going to tell you her real name. And no, she's never going to give you her real number. She's working. This is retail. That's all
this is. I was going to say earlier when you were describing counting, like quantifying your hours, you sounded more like an accountant than a performer. You are essentially you're essentially doing your own taxes and do you even have a healthcare plan?
I went ahead and got what they call Obamacare because I work for myself. So, but yeah, we have our own, we do our taxes just like everyone else. We do our taxes like everyone sometimes. And yes, thongs are a write-off. We do our taxes like everyone. We clock in and clock out in a way, so to speak, like everyone. We look at customers the same way a retail person does. It literally is just a heightened form of retail when you work in the strip club or when you work in fetish scenes, stuff like that. If it's not a performance-based one, because when you're in a strip club too, one thing people have to consider is that we're not paid by the hour there. Most strip club culture is that we pay to be there, like a hair salon stylist pays for their booth. You go to a salon, you get your hair done. That stylist is paying to be there on that day to be able to give you these services. When you come to a strip club, we are paying for the shift to work there for that shift for that night. We pay a house fee. And then not only do we pay a house fee, but we also have to do tip outs. We have to tip out the DJ. We have to tip out the security guard, sometimes more than one, especially if you want to get to our car safe at the end of the night or at 2 a.m. in my case. And then there's the house mom sometimes, who is a person backstage helping everyone get food or have anything like that. And then there's the bartender who is bringing you your fake drinks so that you can act drunk, but still, you know, keep on your diet. there's the cocktail waitress who comes and checks on you when you give the sign, you know, to make sure like, okay, this patron is done. Can you please call them a cab? Because I'm not getting any money out of them. There's all these people that we tip out. Then there's house fees. Which could be anywhere from, depending on what type of club you're in, it could be anywhere from $45 the night to $175. You're paying to be there just like at a hair salon or even a retail booth at like an antique mall or something like that. You pay to be there for your time. So every time a client comes up to me and wants to talk to me, I have to calculate how much my time is worth with them, how much I can get with them, for what services, and still calculate how much time I have left talking to them to go to the main stage to do the performance. We make more money doing private dances. Some clubs also have commission work where if you sell a certain amount of drinks, a certain amount of champagne or bottles or anything, you get a commission of that, which some girls make bank just doing that and never once hit the main stage. A lot of people think we are paid there hourly and then we just get all of these ones on the main stage and that's all we do all night is party. And that's not true at all. We're our own accountants. We're our own hairstylists. In my case, I'm my own costumer because I'm a plus size girl and I'm 5'9" and it's very difficult to find lingerie in my size. and we're our own makeup artist, depending on what fantasy we want to sell that day. You know, we're our own timekeepers, we're our own car mechanics. I think one of my favorite things was all of us in our pleaser heels helping each other fix a car once in the parking lot at 2 a.m. That was great. We are our own single women businesses. And we do taxes just like everyone else. We're our own accountants. And that's why it's important for us to calculate when a client walks in. I can tell by his shoes, his attitude, his watch, what he orders at the bar. A lot of girls will rush to the bar to see what you drink. I hold back and I will watch and I'll see who you're looking at too, to see, because I'm older. I know that I'm not everyone's cup of tea when there's an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 21-year-old that looks super young, you know, there in her adorable baby pink lingerie. So I'm the one that's calculating who's going to get me the most money for the least amount of time so that I can make it back to the main stage. Because at the main stage is where you are performing for everyone in the club to see that they want to buy a dance from you. It's kind of like an audition for everyone in the room to see, oh, I want to get a private dance from her. Oh, wow. Yes. I want eye contact with her, just me and her in the VIP room, please. So that's what your marketing time. So you have to calculate between your marketing time, who's going to buy a private dance from you, who's going to buy a commission drink from you, who's going to buy you a drink because the bar wants you to sell. And who's going to tip you for your time? There's some clients that will come into the strip club where I will just sit with them for an hour and listen to them talk about their day. Or they will vent to me like I'm their therapist while I have, you know, their hand on my hand. And it's just something sweet and endearing. But I know that at the end of that hour, I have a $100 tip that I can go. And then that gets cut down into paying 45 or 50 for house and then tipping out my person. They picks me up my food for my dinner to come for my to go and everything like that. It's trying to figure all of that out. So you're an ongoing accountant on the clock when it comes to that. Whereas with fetish work or performance work like burlesque and doing scenes or films, there's contracts. So you know exactly what you're getting for a day's work. With strip clubs, it's a lot harder. The hustle plus the math ongoing in your brain. With doing things where you sell content online, you're setting your own price so you know what your time is worth. Like I can spend an afternoon making content and then selling it or loading it onto everything from clips for sale to OnlyFans or whatever. And I know that that's going to sit there and it will ongoingly make money as people download it or buy it. So I have to calculate how much I want to sell that for versus how much money I put into that costume for that photo shoot or how much I pay that photographer for that photo shoot or for that videographer who filmed it. And sometimes you have to be your own videographer and photographer. Selfies, man. Oh, selfies are so hard. I'm too old for this. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
One of the things that you had talked about a minute ago with the strip clubs and how you're not everybody's cup of tea. There's some younger ones out there that that people might be looking for. Is there a lot of competition in that situation where everybody is, as soon as somebody walks in the door, they're all eyeballing, they're all trying to gauge whether or not this person is going to be interested in them? Or are they trying to then try to grab their attention by approaching them before anybody else? Like, I almost want to say like a used car salesman on the lot. There's three of them out there and nobody's come by all day. And then somebody walks onto the lot and everybody's like, I'm going to go get them first. Is there that kind of mindset in the strip club?
It can be. It depends on the crew that you're working with or the girls that you're working with or the dancers you're working with. Sometimes you're very close and you know, like, hey, this one's going to want you, or hey, your regular's back. Do you want me to just steer them your way? Sometimes you get a good team that you like to work with, that you all know each other. Sometimes, like, would I travel a lot? So there's been times that people think I'm the new girl in a club and I've just been the guest for the night, but I've already been there before. So I look like the new girl. So, or I look like, that I'm not always there. So sometimes there's a lot of competition. So it just depends on where you're working and who you're working with. I'm not going to lie, a slow night at a strip club is a fun night because you could, if you take enough money, you could literally dance with every dancer in the house and have a great time. But it's also too a matter of consent. You know, if someone's in the mood to talk to you, if someone's in the mood to approach you first. And I think that a lot of people forget that when it comes to strip club, that everybody's consent levels are different and how people want to be treated at work, because we are working. How people want to be treated in the workspace is always important as well. So it just depends. So, you know, just like people have good days in restaurants and bad days in restaurants.
Yeah. Now, going back into some of the areas that you've personally worked in, as far as the sex work realm, I don't want you to criminalize yourself or while on camera or anything, but I'm going to go under the assumption that maybe some of the things that you've done at some point may not be considered legal in some of your areas. Would that be a correct assumption?
I think it depends on where you're talking and what point in my life. I've always tried in my life to do everything as legally as possible. Mm-hmm. I've always tried to do everything as safe as possible, because at the end of the day, it's about my safety and my money. But I will say that there has been times that I got booked for a show in another county, I think in another state, and the producer had never heard of blue laws before. And this was for burlesque. This is the tamest of the tame things I've ever done. This was just, you know, just classic burlesque. And they were like, what are blue laws? And I'm like, I need to know whether I'm allowed to show side boob on stage or not, or will I get arrested? There's places that I've performed in costumes that are not legal. And I did not know. So I learned real quick to always research my blue laws before I perform anywhere, whether it's for strip club work or for burlesque or nerdlesque or even cosplay, because there's some places where if alcohol is served under a roof, whether it's even if it's not a bar, if it's a hotel or a convention center, if alcohol is served under a roof and I have panties that show too much butt cheek, or I don't have like three fingers of fabric in the front and two in the back of my costume, I can get arrested, whereas my male counterparts do not.
When you think of cosplay, you always think of the Harley Quinn costumes. You don't think of the fact that there might be a law pertaining to how much fabric you can have on your body. And I guess maybe I don't think that way because I'm a guy. And like you said, that's never a problem for men. I never would have thought that was a problem anywhere. So that's surprising.
Even something simple as cosplay, a woman can get arrested based on laws of what women are allowed to wear. And some places the laws have not changed since the 50s. There's one city, and it was made famous by Lily Sincere back in like the 40s or 50s. Yes, hello kitten, hello, I love you too, go away kitten. Where you could not, they've set up these weird arbitrary laws to make burlesque and strippers not be able to work, where you couldn't go on a stage or in a public place and leave it with less clothing than what you went on. So she reversed her entire bathtub act, where instead she went on, did the bathtub, and then got dressed on stage, as opposed to what she does normally. So which is, you know, getting naked and then taking the bath and woohoo, that's the act. So there's some places where those laws still exist, which is very interesting to me. There's places where you have to have permits, and some of us didn't know we had to have permits. You know, if you're brought in as a guest, sometimes you don't know these things. So always in my writers, my contracts now, I always like, here's my list of questions for you. Please supply them. I think my safety and my money has always come first, so I always have my ducks in a row. I think younger, more eager people don't think about that real quick. They're always just like, yes, let's work, let's do the work, yes, please work. I've broken a lot of terms of service on platforms, but I don't think I've ever broken laws knowingly. Okay.
Now, getting really personal, relationships in your profession, is that a difficult thing to navigate? Are there lots of jealousy issues with people that you have been a partner of? Or is that something that's never been an issue for you? And has it really been an issue for the people that you've worked with that you've noticed?
The stigma is always going to be there. I've lost relationships. I've lost jobs. I was, when I was outed as a queer stripper to my family, I was disowned by my own family, which I can talk about now and laugh and make jokes about. At the time, it was very traumatizing. Mm-hmm. But I'm lucky enough now that I see the people in my life who respect me and see me and know that that's just a job that I mentally clock in and clock out for. And I have a partner now that is very supportive and very much just like, oh, you're going to work? Okay, let me know when you get there. Let me know if you're safe. If you need me to come get you, or if you need anything, let me know, you know. Or even helps me pick out costumes, like this color. This color looks really good on you on stage lights. I'm like, yes. So I'm very lucky now, and I know not everyone gets that. I'm very lucky now to have a partner. My primary partner is a very supportive, loving person. That's a great human being that, you know, gets it and actually helps me take some sexy photos and sexy video, which is always fun. It's like bonding for us now. but before, it was definitely difficult. I've lost relationships, I've lost friendships, I've lost professional relationships and jobs and everything. The stigma is definitely there. The stigma is strong, and some people get it, some people don't. And if they don't get it and they don't want to respect you for it, then they're never going to respect you, and then they don't deserve you in their life. And I figured that that's just the way to go. And you eventually get over it. And if not, you complain to your therapist and make her laugh about butt cheek jokes.
How do you approach that conversation when it comes up when you're beginning a relationship? Is it something that that comes up on the first date? Like, oh, what do you do? It's like, oh, well, buckle up. Let me get. And, or is it something that you introduce people into slowly and you start to unfold it, peel it back like another layer of the onion to show, oh, this yeah, this is something, you know, this too. Yeah, oh, I had now this as well. And just see how far you can go before their mind explodes.
Oh, to quote Shrek, I am like an onion. I have layers, donkey, I have layers. I find it depends on the person. When it came to my relationship, I was very forward about it. I was just like, hey, this. And then when it came to secondary polyamory partners, it's in my profile. It says what I do. It says that I will not be around for the holidays. It says this is why I will not be available on these nights, is because I have a career and this is it. So, you know, like I'm very upfront with it when it came to intimate relationships and personal, very personal relationships. I'm still very wary when it comes to making casual friendships about it, because there's still that thing where you met me at a Comic-Con and you didn't realize that that was just my lunch break. I'm very wary sometimes. Lately though, because my career has been publicized after being an author for a book and going, you know, viral on TikTok for one of my acts and things like that, I feel that I kind of need to be upfront about it. Like if I was going to apply for a job, say tomorrow, I'd be like, here's what I do. Yes, you can Google me. Yes, when I was young, there was very weird kooky videos out there of me. And then now I still do this work and this work and this work. It is part of my life and it's part of who I am. I'm assuming that you, as a fellow feminist or woke person, might actually be chill with that. I'd appreciate it, thanks. It will stay out of the workplace, you know, that kind of thing. But it's been I've made it a part of, because of the activism I've done and the advocacy I've done, I've made it part of so much of who I am, brand-wise and person-wise. I think it's hard to separate it. I recently had a friend who was like, I miss friend Michaela. I don't think I miss showgirl Michaela. I was kind of like, that's 80% of my personality. What? I know that sometimes it's difficult for people, especially because they feel neglected, that you don't have time, that you always have to work, that everything's a hustle. Every social media post is not really about you having a good time at some restaurant. It is a selective move. It's a well-calculated move for marketing purposes. Like, you know, like it's in at the end of the day, it's to pay my rent and to put food on the table. And I think that's difficult for a lot of people. And I think that on top of the stigma of, oh God, women having bodily agency and then profiting off of it, is so terrible. How dare, how dare. I think that combination is always difficult for people. But I think when you find the right people, that's your family. Stick with them because they respect you.
That's good advice. I think no matter what your profession winds up being on, honestly.
Right.
Just kind of a final question. Let's just say there's somebody that's approaching 18 and they've heard kind of what you talk about and they say, oh, you know, I think this is something I might want to try. But I kind of a twofold question. Is it something that you would recommend? And if so, how would you recommend somebody get into a sex work type of career?
I definitely have to say, make sure it's for you. Make sure the type of category and subcategory you're getting. Like, I found out real quick, I'm not into messy stuff. I think you got to figure out, have a good sense of self, have a good sense of personality, of like your personal self, and make sure that you can do it safely. Make sure that you're well-researched. Make sure you can do it in a way that does not jeopardize your life. I know a lot of people go into it because they feel that they have to, or they feel like they have no other choices or options. A lot of people think too that that's why people are in this work, and they're not. Some of us genuinely enjoy it. Some of us actually love putting on pleather and hitting people with riding crops. but make sure that it's for you and make sure that the safety is there. Don't do it because you're desperate. And I think the rise of websites like OnlyFans has truly shown people the difference between the difficult work that it is and the hustle that it is, as well as that terrible stigma. Like, my heart breaks for the EMT that lost her job this week because of the stupid article that was not, she didn't, the consent situation with that alone was just infuriating to me. I saw red. But that poor girl, like, leave her alone. She's working. She has two jobs. Leave her alone. That's all this article was. You told me a woman has two jobs. Ooh. But I feel like people need to understand that that could happen to you, that you have to be willing and okay with the consequences that are not because something's your fault. It's not your fault at all. You're just working. You're just doing a job, but there are terrible society stigma-based consequences there. There's safety issues. There's knowing that cops will not, they will arrest us for something ourselves, or they will harass us or use it as a point of access to abuse their authority. There's so many risk factors there that you have to take them all into consideration before you truly, I think, find someone within the community who is okay, that is a safe person to mentor. Find someone who is doing workshops or classes on a type of sex work that you are that you are interested in. Like, if you're interested in shibari rope art, or if you're interested in modeling or fetish work, you know, go to the conventions, go see how, if it's within your budget or within your means. And in some cases, there's scholarships for marginalized people to be able to help them learn how to do things safely. Take classes or find mentors, find a safe anchor in the community within your area, and don't go things alone where you are endangering yourself. I feel that if you are wanting to do it, do your research, find out your laws, take a look, step back and take a look at how the press looks at us. Take a look at the resources in your area, such as the Red Umbrella Organization. I adore the Red Umbrella Organization. They will have resources and connections for you anywhere if you're interested in working in it, but also ways for you to do things safely and the safe networks, especially after legislation like FOSTA and SESTA, which completely wiped out our online networks and ways to talk to each other. Once again, a matter of think of the children, think of the sex trafficking victims without actually asking us, without actually asking sex workers how to do things safely. They eliminated entire websites of how we communicated with each other of, hey, this client is safe. Hey, this client is not safe. Hey, here's a safe resource for sex workers at this location. You know, like, I feel like without those things, you need to go forward with actual organizations such as the nonprofit Red Umbrella. Every year before the pandemic, I used to do some kind of fundraiser for them, whether it was to sell art or to do a burlesque show or a comedy show or something like that. So we always try to raise money for them because it's the one I truly, truly believe in. There's also the Mama Cash organization, which is attached to them. And what they do is they provide resources from everything from condom supply to housing to rehoming you if you are in an unsafe situation where you need to get away from actual sex trafficking. There's great organizations like that. And then they're also doing legislative work so that they can make legislative change for sex workers as well to make, so yeah. And if you want, follow one online. See what they're doing. See, support them. Throw them some money on their coffee or their Discord or something or whatever. Throw money at them. Throw them some money on their Cash App or Venmo, and pick their brain in exchange for money. You know, it's still their time. But I definitely think before you dive in and find out, oh God, this is dangerous and a lot of hard work and I don't know what I did and I'm over my head and now I can never get a job elsewhere. and now no one's talking to me. Before you dive in, do your research and make sure that there's safe resources for you in your area.
Now, you had mentioned that that you're getting a book published. And so I want to have you tell us a little bit more about not only your book, but where people can find out more information about you personally online.
Oh, it is already out.
Okay.
So yeah, so it's available at Barnes & Noble, or you can go to policingmuses.com. It's called Policing Muses, A History with Pasties and Merkins. And what it is it starts out with the history of women getting their bodies policed in the arts, whether what they can wear on stage versus the raids, the Minskys and everything like that. And it leads up to actually something that's happening again this weekend. You might have noticed your favorite cosplayers, bikini models, sex workers, and burlesque dancers and naked artists on Instagram are all going, oh God, the terms of service changed on December 20th. Why? It's because of a law called Fosta-Incesta, which is based on the antique ideals that a woman's modesty's litmus test is based on what she wears in public. So I have a whole 150 page feminist rant if you'd like to read it. It's an easy, quick read with a lot of history, but it also includes interviews with burlesque dancers and sex workers and strippers throughout history of different eras. Some that I actually got to interview before the lockdowns and before they passed away and things like that too. So there's a lot of cool information there, as well as statistics and a survey that I did that was by sex workers for sex workers on how Fosta-Incesta and the shutdowns that happened from Patreon to TikTok to Instagram and how it's affected us before and affected our incomes and how you can actually help if you're not a sex worker or you don't want to be a sex worker, but you want to help. There's actually a whole chapter about how you can deal with situations like Fosta-Incesta and help out with that and see how it affects us, but how you can help firsthand. So yeah, there's a whole thing about that. That's available on Barnes & Noble or policingmuses.com. And then you can find me online anywhere because I'm Florida's naked nerd, doing everything from cosplay to lighting my boobs on fire. So I can be found on almost any platform, including Instagram, until they scrub me out. It's at Lady Mikaela, LadyMikaela, or if that's too difficult to spell, you can always do hashtag FL naked nerd or hashtag fangirl with fangirls.
All right, excellent. Well, Mikaela, I greatly appreciate you coming on the show. I learned a lot personally because there's just I wouldn't have known to how to ask a certain question. So if I enjoyed myself, I know folks listening definitely did as well. So thank you so much, because it was very enlightening for somebody on the outside looking in. I can tell you that for sure.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for actually for posting what you posted, how we found each other. I really appreciate the fact that someone was like, I want to know things that I can't ask, so come to me. I like it when people are like, I want to talk about sex work, but I need to actually talk to an actual sex worker.
Yep.
So thank you. Because so often people will like glance over it and then, but not actually ask for the voices at the table. Mm-hmm. We're never even invited to the table. So thank you for actually asking, like, I need to know a stripper. Do I know a stripper out here? Here's a stripper. Ask stripper questions.
Well, my pleasure. I greatly appreciate it. And now a challenge to all my listeners, a challenge I make every week. If you also have a subject that you're passionate about, like Mikaela, and you can speak with authority on it, and you're not afraid to tackle some of the tough questions that could come your way, I want to talk to you on Unsensitive. So reach out through the Fearscape Media Network or write me directly at rayrobwrites@gmail.com. And maybe you'll be the next one on my show. Special thanks to Ben Sounds for the use of the song Happy Rock, and of course the fine folks at Fearscape for giving me a venue. And thank you for listening to Unsensitive. We'll talk again soon, and until then, keep your mind open.